The grapes. There used to be plenty of red grapes grown in the Eastern Loire, but that was before the big deep freeze of 1709. Now it is known as the white wine region, but as climate change is encroaching, the red plantings are creeping back. Here is some Cabernet Franc and Côte, Malbec, and a bit of Gamay and Pinot Noir. They're simple and satisfying. Now retired Muscadet master Guy Boussard said his Cabernet Franc on granite looked very much like the floral side of Pinot Noir. Meanwhile, the region is known for non-aromatic white grapes. One is Gros Plan, the local name for Folle Blanche. This is the very same grape that most often turns up in Armagnac. As a still wine, it struggles under the reputation of being a somewhat vile, acidic grape, but those who like their wine with edge will disagree and seek these out from organic or biodynamic producers, especially when it shows up as a sparkling wine. The other grape, however, is the defining one of the region. The Muscadet is, without a doubt, the territory of Melon de Bourgognon. As the name suggests, it most likely did come from Burgundy. Melon is highly suited to Pays Nantais because it's relatively sturdy in the area's cold winters. Jancis Robinson has been dismissive of it, saying there is limited but marked enthusiasm for the variety in the U.S. Call us some of those with marked enthusiasm. Winemaking in the Muscadet. Traditional winemaking is simple. Raise and ferment in cement tanks, many submerged beneath the ground. On the label, you'll notice another clue, sur lee, which means on the lees. This is the practice of leaving the wines to age on the spent lees until bottling. While this might seem like dirty winemaking, the nutrition in the spent lees brings a lot of depth, texture, flavor, and a touch of creaminess to the wine. Traditionally, malolactic fermentation does not occur, and most of the wines are bottled within a year. Yet there are exceptions, and today more ambitious producers are aging the wines longer in barrels, not in cement, allowing the mallow to happen and a very different image of a rounder Muscadet to emerge. Deceptively simple, the grape is highly sensitive and expressive and can age far longer than its gentle pricing indicates. In addition, it is extremely place-sensitive and a great translator of soil. Lucky for us, here is a great opportunity to learn what one grape can do from the same producer on different soils. They can be silver-tongued, edgy, refreshing wines with a lashing of salinity. They can be rounder and shorter. They can have vibrant electricity. Mostly, as David noted, what you'll find is how acidity is delivered to the palate, depending on whether the grapes grew on amphibolite, schist, gneiss, or granite. There are some winemakers experimenting with Melon stateside, especially in Oregon, where you can experience it from basalt. The Cru Communaux. The best growers of the Muscadet always knew they had something special, but for years, even those who worked organically and raised their wines traditionally in cement tanks and made beautifully angular, salty wines, were only getting pennies for their heartfelt wines. Fed up, the Muscadet growers banded together to make a point. In 2011, the work of about 50 top growers resulted in a Grand Cru classification for Muscadet called the Cru Communaux. The first ones to get the designation were Gorgeois on gabbro, Clisson on granite, and Le Palais on ortho gneiss and gabbro. Eventually, this should also go to Goulin on mica schists and gneiss. Note that gneiss, ortho gneiss, schist, and amphibolite are metamorphic. The idea was to give credence to the Muscadets known for their richness, their complexity, and ageability. There would be some parameters, such as limiting yields and minimum aging on the lees. The designation requires 17 to 24 months aging sur lee. Like everywhere else, they want an appellation status. Be prepared for a much-deserved price increase. Introducing the Cru Communaux. 1. Gorge, clay and quartz atop gabbro. 2. Le Palais, metamorphic, gabbro, gneiss, and ortho gneiss. 3. Clisson, granite. 4. Monnier sans fiacre, metamorphic, gneiss. 5. Château Thébault, granite. 6. Goulin, Metamorphic, gneiss, and schist. 7. Muzion, Tillier. Metamorphic, gabbro. 8. La Haye Foussiard, gneiss, orthogneiss, and amphibolites. 9. Valais, metamorphic, schist with volcanic gabbro on the perimeter. Who to drink? The classics. Domaine de la Louveterie, Joe Landrin. La Haye Foussiard, biodynamic. Domaine de l'Écu, Le Landreau, biodynamic. Marc Olivier, Domaine de la Paix-Pierre, Maison sur Sèvres, organic. Domaine Pierre Luneau Papin, Le Landreau, biodynamic conversion. Jacques Carroget, Domaine de la Panerie, organic. André-Michel Bréjon and Frédéric Lallier, Domaine Michel Bréjon, Gorge, sustainable. Bruno Cormeret, Saint-Lumine de Clisson, sustainable. The New Blood, Complémentaire, Manuel Landron and Marianne Peychaud, organic. Vincent Cayet, Domaine Le Fay d'Homme, Monnier Saint-Fiancre, organic. Jérôme Bretedieu, Domaine de Bellevue, Jetiné, organic. Marc Peynot, Domaine de la Sénéchalie, Le Leroy Bottereau, organic. Julien Brault, Monnier Saint-Fiacre, organic conversion. Domaine Bonnet-Huteau, La Chapelle-Hulin, organic, biodynamic. Beaujolais. Imagine kicking your child out of the house and banishing her to a bare and rugged land to fend for herself in the cold and the rain. In this case, the child was the Gamay grape. The tasty parent was the land of Burgundy. Here's what happened. Gamay first appeared in the 14th century when the grape was noticed right outside Saint-Aubin in Burgundy in the town called Gamay. Like the new girl in town who turns everyone's head, the grape initially made a big splash. In his book, The Story of Wine, writer Hugh Johnson reported that the people of the region considered the grape to be the Almighty's apology for the bubonic plague. The variety showed promise by bearing an abundant crop and ripening a full 2 weeks earlier than did the hometown favorite, Pinot Noir. The resultant wine also delivered plenty of flavor. But in 1395, the Duke of Burgundy, Philippe the Bold, called the Gamay vine a bad and disloyal plant, whose wine was foul, bitter, and harmful to humans. My God, what slander! Finding that the vines lacked the aristocratic elegance, light texture, and fragrance of other wines in the region, he ordered that they be destroyed. Yet the grape was a survivor and took up root in the Loire and the northern Rhone, as well as in Beaujolais. In those regions, it became the peasant queen. The grape was never viewed as royal. Farmers suffered. Caught between the grandeur of the northern Rhone and the regal Burgundy, Gamay and Beaujolais had awkward middle child syndrome. Centuries later, they suffered another abuse with the arrival of Beaujolais Nouveau. Created as a marketing spoof by Georges Dubuff, the third Thursday of November was declared as the day this wine, the first peek at the new vintage, was given to the world. Fanfare and parties ensued. The problem was, the wine was a parody of a real one. Oh, sure, it was a nice, easy drink, but it prevented most of the world from understanding just how good the grape on the granite in the windy microclimate on those hilly slopes can be. And so the world looked away from a region that had fallen into poverty and bad wines. Salvation came in the form of a winemaker named Marcel Lapierre. He lived in the village of Morgon and realized his wines and those of his friends were awful. As he told me years later, the two tits of the Beaujolais were sulfur and sugar, referring to the fact that the grapes were picked underripe, then fermented with sugar, and then sulfated to keep the wine stable. All in all, a toxic stew. With the help of a naturally minded scientist and winemaker, a gentleman named Jules Chauvet, Lapierre started to farm organically and make wine naturally, even leaving out the sulfur. His friends caught on. The winemakers became known as the Band of Five, first sold to Paris, and then in the 80s to the rest of the world. As one friend told another, and that friend told another, the trend spread until something referred to as the natural wine movement took hold and changed the way the whole world was drinking. These were serious wines with deep traditional roots. Mostly they were made in semi-carbonic style, as was the custom. This meant, instead of crushing the grapes, they were vinified in vats of whole berries. The fruit starts to ferment inside an enzymatic fermentation that fosters fruity and spicy aromas. The wine is often thought of as not necessarily ready to drink early, but certainly ready by November. Beaujolais had a lot in common with the Muscadet. Both were poor. Both had farmers that had a tough time making a living and even a good deal of suicides, but the natural winemakers in both regions found their drinkers and their fame. These are the wines I love to drink, yet only now are they getting respect. Caught between the Syrah, grown in the northern Rhone, and the Pinot in Burgundy, Beaujolais Gamay suffers. It has a far more subtle beauty, but it sure does gorgeously on granite. The dirt. In the south of Beaujolais, the soil is derived from limestone and contains quite a bit of clay, dismissed as just not good for Gamay. But there are a few exquisite examples that contradict this. Gamay on granite tends to be edgier and more acidic and tends to do better in the cold and damp. Limestone, depending on the clay content, tends to be a bit fleshier and does better in the dry and hot. It is also there that the Chardonnay is mostly grown to produce the little-known Beaujolais Blanc. The more well-known regions are in the north, where there's a powerful granite spine and where all the 10 crew exist. More on these later. But nevertheless, the takeaway is that this is the land where granite pays homage to the grape, and the others are fabulous exceptions. There are 10 special places for Beaujolais, and these are called the crew. Each of these villages has their specific nuances and creates structured wines of beauty that have that touchstone of breeding and the ability to age very well. The look of the vines in the region is compelling as well. They are not conventionally trellised, but grow in petite round bushes that are almost bonsai-like. Each crew has its own distinct soil profile. Saint-Amour, granite and clay. Juliennes, sand-like granite on the west. Gneiss and schist with some veins of manganese and porphyry, and alluvial with more clay on the east. Cherouble, one of the highest crus, granite and clay smectite. Chenin, pink granite, red sand, and quartz. Moulin-en-Vent, the pinkest granite. Fleury, another high elevation crew, pink granite with some clay. Morgon, mostly schist with important patches of granite. Reynier, sand-like granite and schist. Bruilly, pink and blue intrusive igneous rocks, granite, diorite, schist, pierre bleu, limestone, and sandstone. Côte de Bruilly, pink and blue intrusive igneous rocks, pink granite on the west, blue diorite on the north and south. The grapes. During the harvest that I worked at Clos Roche Blanche in the Loire, I picked Gamay from limestone. My hands were inked black from the grapes, thin-skinned and juicy. Their pigment is fierce. Gamay has quite a tight bunch and is prone to rot, early to bud and early to ripen. It is also a sloppy mess if grown in too sunny a land, as it is susceptible to sunburn. For this reason, it seems to do perfectly well in the difficult, windy, and often wet and dreary Beaujolais. And the taste? Well, think of Pinot Noir. Delicate, some tannins, and yet marvelously hinting of forest fruit. It is in the same family of, dare I say, feminine wines, easy to drink without being stupid. The traditional semi-carbonic method gives it a cinnamon flavor and aroma, but it often has some delicate sandpaper tannin. In the northern Rhone, there are barely any vines left, but worth drinking if you can find them. In the Loire, on just about any of the soils there, limestone, basalt, and schist, it is often easygoing and more grounded. It's gaining popularity in Oregon, and there's a bit of a rush on it in California. Planted in the right places and perhaps blended with Cabernet Franc, as can be the case in the Loire, it can shine. It was in the granite belt of Australia, in Beechworth, that I once had a strikingly lovely Gamay from Barry Morey of Sorenberg. Was it a combination of the poor granite soils that were not irrigated and carefully biodynamic farming that made this grape possible over there? Was it the marriage of place, soil, and farmer? The vintage I tasted was made without sulfur addition and was more than 20 years old. It had structure. It had fruit. It had integrity. The wine maintained everything that allowed a wine to be called agreeable. I was impressed. Though little of it is made, there is Chardonnay, and usually what is made is quite good. The best are made gently, with no fanfare, and they are often good bargains. Definitely look for those from Jean-Paul Brun, Domaine de Trédrouet, Christophe Pascalet, Jean-Paul Dubost, and Pierre Chermette. Winemaker Profile, Domaine de la Grand Cour. Jean-Louis Dutrève worked with his father from 1977, but took over the Domaine de la Grand Cour in Fleury in 1989. For a while, the wines had been earning dubious reviews from both Robert Parker and David Schildknecht. But in all fairness, perhaps the wine advocate hadn't been aware of a dramatic change. Dutrève had been certified by the organic expert body EcoCert since 2009, which was also his first year of working differently. I asked him why he changed. After all, with due respect, he's not exactly a spring chicken, and at this point in life, most people have settled into their work philosophy. His reasoning was simple. I tasted other wines that had more life in them, so I started to work more naturally. Dutrève returned to full carbonic fermentation, dump whole grape clusters into a vat, seal it up, add CO2, and let the fermentation start from within the berry. He employed a combination of stainless steel, old big barrels, and small barrique of various ages. He bottled his wine unfiltered with minimal SO2 added, sometimes with none at all. Vines have an average age of around 40 to 50 years, with a good chunk around 70 years old, which is moderately old for the region. He has about 9 hectares, the majority of which is on the granitic soils of Fleury in Le Clos, right near his winery. The others are in 2 small parcels. There is an additional 1.6 hectares of Brewery limestone. After driving through Le Clos, I reached Dutrève's run-down farm buildings, where an eager dog came out yapping at me. A quick peek into the weary vines, rot, uneven maturity, proved a little depressing. It was a difficult year, especially for those working the vines. Just the day before, I had come across dire predictions. 50% of the Beaujolais vignerons would be going under because of the difficult weather and low yields. But I believe those unfortunates are mostly those with little reputation for quality. Even though the region is on the upswing, thanks to serious winemakers like Dutrève, Beaujolais still has plenty of underachieving vineyards and winemakers. In the Clos, Dutrève told me he would soon be down to 15 hectoliters per hectare, a ludicrously low yield in a region where 60 is normal. He shrugged it off. This is what he signed up for with organic farming. He might not have much to sell in 2012, but he had enough in 2011, and there's always the next year, and he's a vigneron with a reputation on the ascent. With the dog riding shotgun, Dutrève brought us through the large vat room, lined with variously sized barrels, many of them the very large ovals. We sat down at a rough-hewn table and commenced to taste. The wines are gorgeous. Clos de la Grand Cour is made from younger vines, 10 years, has a touch of sulfur, 2 ppm. It's structured and silty with a bit of blood orange. For me, the heartthrob wines come from older vines, a no-sulfur-added bottling of Chapelle des Bois, raised in the bigger-than-Bordeaux-sized barrels they call foudre, has a slightly grittier texture, a touch of cinnamon aroma, and mouth-watering acidity. It practically shouted its place of origin. Next, we tried the Cuvée Champagne Via Vigna, hailing from the very granitic soils of the Le Dy Champagne, even though it is not a Premier Cru or Grand Cru. In this wine, the structure shines. It also takes a little new wood, which seemed integrated to me. The Brewery Via Vigna comes from very different soils of clay and limestone, Accordingly, the texture was denser, with the characteristic savory fruit balance of that combination. 3 days after being opened, the wine still held together. The last time I went to see Dutrave, I was with Pascaline. It was the winter. The dog still came out to bark at me, but his master seemed a little unnerved. I pointed to a burned-out building, and he shook his head. He had been up battling the fires all night and had forgotten about our visit, but with an "oh well," a smile, and all of his good nature, we went to taste. Who to drink? Domaine de Vigne Dumaine, Julien Guillot, Beaujolais Village, Biodynamic. Johann Lardy, Moulin Avant, Organic. Damien Coquelet, Chirobles, Sustainable, Organic. Claude de la Roulette, Fleury, Sustainable. Jan Betran, Fleury, Morgon, Organic. Yvon Maitre, Fleury, Biodynamic. Jean Foyard, Morgon, Fleury, Organic. Julien Sunier, Regnier, Fleury, Morgon, Organic. Domaine de la Grandcour, Fleury, Brugy, Organic. Karim Vionnet, Morgon, Organic. Domaine G. Chaminard, Morgon, Fleury, Organic. Marcel Lapierre, Morgon, Organic, Biodynamic. Louis-Claude Desvignes, Morgon, Sustainable. Antoine Sunier, Réginé, Organic. Domaine Ducrou, Réginé, Biodynamic. Domaine Pinard, Réginé, Morgon, Biodynamic. Jean-Paul and Charlie Trevenet, Morgon, Réginé, Organic. Georges Descombes, Bruy, Organic. Clotaire Michel, Beaujolais, Organic. Marcel Joubert, Bruy, Morgon, Chirobles, Fleury, Organic. Rémy Dufaitre, Bruy, Organic. Domaine de Terre Dorier, Charnay, Organic. Rias Baixas. If French Muscadet had a Spanish counterpart, it would be Albariño, the wine from the northwest of Spain that's, oh, so close to the top of Portugal. The top winemaking region here is Galicia, and specifically Rias Baixas. The Dirt. Rias Baixas is a land of pink quartz-flecked granitic soils where you're never too far from the ocean. Drive around and take in the granite poles supporting old vines in traditional pergola training, where the vines create a netting overhead, high above the grass below. This keeps the grapes safe from the constant threat of mildew from the humidity. Up there, they can dry out in the Atlantic winds. Like Muscadet, the wines have a delicious salinity, and also like Muscadet, it's best to vinify them simply. Unlike Muscadet, where fermentation often happens in old concrete vats, the best wines here are likely made in old, large, and neutral oak barrels that do not, or should not, impart any taste but round out the angles of this high-acid wine. The grapes. Albariño is the region's calling card. True, it is said that its origin is actually across the border in Portugal, where it's called Alvarinho. But that's splitting hairs. Some red varieties are grown here, just like some red grapes are grown in the Muscadet. Here, the red varieties of choice are Caño, Espadiro, and Mencia. Just like in the Muscadet, as climate change goes into effect and the region gets warmer and drier, the reds will encroach even further into this 90% white wine territory. Albariño is a relatively thick-skinned grape that loves dry soil. You might think that wet Galicia would be a bad fit, but that's where the granitic soil comes in. Sometimes it's mixed with clay, which is just fine in a drought, but in a wet climate, well-drained granitic soils saves Albariño. It is grown a tiny bit in California with decent results, but nowhere else other than Rias Baixas will you get the edge of the northern coast of Iberia. Because it could well be considered a neutral grape, much like Muscadet, comparisons have been made to Riesling, which is kind of silly. But left to its own devices, Albariño's true nature can take on notes of linden and gentle spring flowers in the distance, and these only get more profound with a little age. It is from the land and hands of Alberto Nanclares that the grace of the area is exemplified. Winemaker Profile, Alberto Nanclares. Alberto Nanclares was once an economist. He moved to Rias Baixas in 1993 to be near the sea. The house he bought was in Cambados, in the high-potential viticulture area of Val de Solnes. It had vines. Nanclares slowly gave in to the plants that would soon overtake his life. At first he used chemicals in the vines, but he quickly realized his folly and stopped. He started to make wine with an enologist. The enologist instructed him to remove the acid, which he felt made the wine shrill. At that point, Nanclares said, "To hell with you," and kept his natural acids. After that, he made wine on his own. Today, Nanclares has 2.5 hectares of Albariño vines that are broken into 12 different parcels. He makes 5 wines from them, 2 blends and 3 single vineyard bottlings. He farms organically. His yields are low, 4,000 to 7,000 kilograms per hectare instead of the 12,000 allowed by the DO. Walking out into the bright sunshine less than a mile from the sea, it's a cinch to suss out the difference between his path and his neighbor's. Life. As we walked and his dogs romped around us, the wild mint and brilliant dandelion crushed under our feet exuded the intense essence of spring. The soils are typical of the region's best: clay, sand, and fragments of granite. All of his parcels are vinified separately, and all of his vines are traditional pergola. Nanclares described the wisdom of the trained high trellising as opposed to the guillot, the more typical trellising closer to the ground, which many of the new plantings in the region use. With pergola, there's more humidity control, and you don't need to prune so severely. We went on to examine the vineyard right near the river on his property where, because of the fine, sandy soils, the drainage is efficient, important in a very wet, soggy area like Galicia. The area creates grapes with high acidity, which make the natural process of malolactic fermentation malfunction, and so the grapes here most often fail to complete it and maintain their natural angularity. If you remember the aging potential of great muscadets, you'll want to get some of these to lay into your cellar, maybe not for 20 years, but certainly up to 10. As we started to taste through his cuvée, he reminisced about his 2013 vintage. In that year, there was a relentless rain, even at harvest, which is always panic-inducing. At the time, he says, "I wanted to cry, but now? I'm happy." And so are the wines, which are saline, edgy, full of spark and personality. The Igneous Tasting Box. To get the full impression of the potential of wine from fireborn rocks, you'll want an assortment of wines grown on granite and basalt. Here are a few bottles that are fine representations. 1. Marc Olivier, Domaine de la Pépière, Granite de Clisson, Muscadet, Loire, France. Granite. The first impression of this wine from the Melon grape is freshness and a green apple acidity. There's no real fruit to speak of, but as the nose develops, I pick up hints of white flower and lemon peel. Delicate citrus peel reflects relatively strong lemon. There are almost no tannins and a salty, lingering finish which can reach such a concentration you might mistake it for mineral water. 2. Alberto Nanclares, Dandelion, Rias Baixas, Galicia, Spain, Granite. This Albariño has a lot in common with the Pépière. Neutrality on the nose and a taste that stretches wide in the mouth. It then hits with a delicious, mouth-watering lime acidity that starts to spread. Like the Pépière, there's also a smooth texture and a finish like a briny stone. Unlike the Pépière, there's more power and more of an oiliness with touches of exotic lemongrass and orange blossom. 3. Salvo Foti, I Vigneri, Arore, Etna Bianco Superiore, Sicily, Italy, Basalt, and Black Scoria. A rare Caricante, a beautiful little grape grown inside of the ocean on a land with plenty of sun. Here, there's an orange-like acidity and smell. The taste hits with a fierce, rusty edge and gives over to a very refreshing tension that is felt on the sides of the tongue, ending in a long finish. 4. Jared Dimos Hatzidakis. Assyrtiko Demilos, Santorini, Greece. White pumice and ash. Another seaside selection is the grape Assyrtiko, which hails from white sandy soils. The lemon is here. The attack is fierce. But there is also such fierce acidity, puckery, and cleansing acids, a little bit like a scrubbing. The most tannic of all the wines listed here, with an almond skin quality giving a lot of texture to the wine, with a higher level of alcohol, it is a big boy. 5. Calabretta, Etna Rosso, Sicily, Italy, Basalt and Scoria. This red wine from Mount Etna has a lot in common with the other seaside representatives. A blend of Nerello Mascalese and Nerello Cappuccio, the soils it grows in are lower in elevation and less sandy. But the acidity is not subtle. It comes at the end like an ashen rasp of the hammer. There's some sesame seed, some linseed, and underneath it all, some black currant. 6. Domaine Marcel Joubert, Fleury Vieux Vigne, Beaujolais, France, pink granite and clay. Tannin at the finish on top of apple-like acid. The fruit takes a back seat to the savory, and it is just a completely satisfying Beaujolais. Note how there's definitely that fruit, but there's a frame around it, a structure that's a little gritty and yet transparent. It all knits together and a story unfolds of fresh spring, concentration, and just a little bit of fur. 7. Jason Lett, The Irie Vineyards, Pinot Noir Reserve Original Vines, Dundee Hills, Oregon, Jory. The Irie Pinot is one of the most transparent in Oregon, ungrafted vines and definitely an age-worthy one. With a noticeable upfront ripeness, the tannins are a little more assertive and broad than in Burgundy, almost giving a Nebbiolo-esque feel with age. Smoky, pastrami-like. The acid is here, ripe yet fierce, and holding up very well with the alcohol and the touch of vegetal green. 8. Hervé Souhaute, Domaine Rumineaux d'Esterze, Saint-Joseph, Northern Rhône, France, degraded granite. Gentle smell of smoke and a little bit of berry. In the mouth, the Syrah shows its acidity from the front. In the back, there's spark and energy. The body is medium and limpid, and there's a bit of wet nail as well. The tannins are quite subtle. Are all of these grapes, white or red, as dissimilar as you think? Acids. Where do they hit your mouth? Are they sharp, soft, difficult, juicy? Tannins. Are they harsh, ripe, suede-like, sandpapery, an ash-like finish? Taste. Savory, briny, spicy, flinty? Texture. Grainy or smooth? Structure. What is it like? Is there one? An exoskeleton or more of an interior scaffolding? Igneous quick reference. Where? France. Loire, Muscadet. Soils? Granite. Climate. Mild winters, warm summers, humid, and western wind. Known for melon. Where? France, Beaujolais, soils, granite, climate, continental, known for Gamay, Chardonnay. Where? France, Northern Rhône, soils, granite, climate, cold winter, warm summer, known for Syrah, Voyagnier, Marsan, Roussan. Where? Greece, Santorini, soils, pumice, volcanic, climate, windy, hot, known for Assyrtiko. Where? Spain. Canary Islands. Soils, basalt. Climate, tropical with a lot of variation depending on altitude, known for Negra Mol, Listón, Negro, and Blanco. Where? Spain. Galicia. Soils, granite. Climate, cool, wet, known for Albariño. Where? Spain, Ribera Sacra. Soils, granite, metamorphic, schist. Climate, cool, wet, known for Mencia, Godello, Trechadora, Lado, Ferrol, Quino, Garnacha tintorera. Where? Spain, Sierra de Gredos. Soils, granite. Climate, hot, dry. Known for Abillo Garnacha. Where? Italy, Mount Etna. Soils, basalt, ash. Climate, hot, sun. Known for Norello Mascalese, Cappuccio, Chericante. Where? Italy, Bramatera. Soils, granite, tough. Climate, damp mountain climate. Known for Croatina uvarada. Where? Italy, Suave. Soils, basalt, limestone. Climate, wet, temperate. Known for Garganega. Where? Hungary, Tokaj. Soils, basalt, tough. Climate, continental, harsh, cold winter, warm summer. Known for Harslevelu, Firma. Where? Australia, Beechworth. Soils, granite. Climate, hot, dry. Known for Syrah, Pinot Noir, Gamay, Chardonnay. Where? USA, Willamette, Oregon. Soils, basalt. Climate, wet, sunny. Known for Pinot Noir. Where? USA, Sierra Nevada foothills, California. Soils, granite. Climate, high elevation, hot, dry. Known for Syrah, Mourvedre, Gamay. Where? USA, Vermont. Soils, granite, schist. Climate, cool, wet. Known for Marquette, Louise Swenson, Frontenac.